chances are the imam had a stronger evidence, okay? A stronger hadith. So you may have come upon a hadith. Yes, you did come upon a hadith, but you didn't come upon all the hadith. There's a stronger hadith out there that you're not aware of. So it's funny that, oh my gosh, the imam didn't know about the hadith. Also, look in the mirror. Maybe you also didn't know about some evidences, right? Why? It seems to be egotistical for us to come this far down in Islamic history and say, boom, he didn't know the hadith. Maybe also you don't know a lot of things about the evidences that they used, okay? So that's one thing. Secondly, it could be a Quranic verse, and certain hadiths and certain scholars differ on whether certain hadiths can provide exceptions to Quranic verses or not. All right, let me give you a simple example. The Malikis and the Hanafis did not hold that a solitary hadith can provide an exception to a Quranic verse. Okay, Quranic verse is mutawatir. Okay, it's more authoritative than one single narration that lacks context and explanation. So what they did, for example, on when Eid falls on Jum'ah, what's the ruling there? The ruling there for the Hanafis and the Malikis is that you must pray Jum'ah. The Shafi'iyya, and I don't know about the Hanabila, but the Shafi'iyya, Imam al-Shafi'i, he took a different approach than his previous two teachers. He said, no, even if we have one single narration, we will use that as an exception for the Quran. So there is a narration in which the Prophet ﷺ told some people that if Eid is on a Jum'ah, they don't have to come back. Okay, for Jum'ah, pray the Dhuhr in their homes. So what did Abu Hanifa and Malik say about that hadith? They say, we didn't see any of the previous generations practicing that. So we don't deny that it happens, but we don't know the context. Was it an exception? Was there a specific thing? Was it abrogated later on? We don't know. So we don't deny that the hadith took place, but we don't have enough information around it, okay, to make a ruling by it. And the companions and the tabi'in and the tabi'i tabi'in, none of their leaders practiced it. They all prayed Jum'ah on Eid. As a result of that, we accept it as a sahih hadith, but we can't use it as evidence. We're going to use the action of the companions and the tabi'in as a greater evidence. Now, the actions of the companions, is that not the sunnah? When a whole generation of companions is doing something, is that not the teaching of the Prophet, peace be upon him? Okay. So that's the first understanding, is that there was another evidence that's stronger than that. Okay, what's next? It could have been abrogated. We already alluded to that. It could have been abrogated. So when the companions see, when an imam sees that there is an isolated hadith, one narration to do X, but we find none of the companions or the second generation doing X, then what do they assume? They assume maybe it was abrogated. Because why is it that the action is different, okay, of the most noble of generations and this narration? So it's not to say that the narration is rejected. It's to say there is not enough information around it, and there is contradictory information to it. In other words, the actions of the next two generations is contradictory to it. So as a result of that, we're just going to suspend it, and we're not going to act upon it. We're going to act upon what's stronger. Yeah, I'm going to assume possibly it was abrogated. Another possibility was an exception. So for example, the raising of the hands, even the clasping of the hands, to take as an example. Malik himself cites the hadith of the clasping of the hands, but his madhab is to put the hands down in the prayer. So we need to know, like, hey, don't drive me crazy here. We're following the Prophet. The hadith is right there. Why are you ruling the opposite? So the answer is that oftentimes a hadith is deemed to be an exception to the rule, not the rule itself. Okay? And what's an example of that? In other narrations, they state that the Sahaba were praying long nawafil and the Prophet and their hands were getting numb. And so the Prophet ﷺ said, clasp your hands as an exception, as a rukhsa, when you're praying long prayers, to clasp your hands so that your hands don't get numb. The blood is coming down to their hands. So it's the idea that a narration is accepted, but it's known to be an exception versus the rule, right? And that's why a madhab ruling may seem to be quite opposite. And Suyuti mentions that Imam Malik has dozens of hadiths that he puts in the Muwatta that he doesn't rule by, because he's basically putting them in the Muwatta saying, I know these are exceptions. These are not the rule. Okay. Another famous hadith is Al-Bay'ani Bil-Khiyari Ma Lam Yatafarraqa. Very funny example that a man came to Imam Malik and he said, Malik, when can two people who buy and sell something, make a deal, retract? He says, they can. As soon as they make the deal, it's done. Okay? He says, but Malik, you yourself cite the hadith in the Muwatta that two people, they can retract their deal that they made, okay, as long as they're still sitting together. Right? He says, I cited that hadith so that an ignorant person like you doesn't come and tell me one day that there is such a hadith. I knew that hadith, okay, but I have a stronger evidence from it. There's a stronger evidence to that, okay? And so, again, you have situations where the imam may know a hadith and cite it himself, but he's citing it to make people know, I know it, and I have a stronger evidence for it than it. Okay, so what's another example? How about that the narrator may act differently from what he narrated? What happens when that occurs? Narrator says one thing. He says, the prophet said, do this. But he doesn't do it. So clearly, he viewed it as a minor fadila, or maybe an exception. And the famous example of Abdullah bin Umar, who narrates the hadith of raising the hands before rukuh and after rukuh. So maybe he was saying the Prophet ﷺ did it once or twice, but as an exception, not the rule, because he himself was narrated that he didn't do it. He narrated the hadith, but he didn't do it. Okay? We have other examples of this, bigger issues. How about Sayyidina Ali and the Khawarij? Did not the Prophet ﷺ say, if I was alive when the Khawarij came out, I would kill them all? Who narrates that hadith? Sayyidina Ali. Who was alive ruling when the Kharijites came out? Sayyidina Ali. Did he kill them all? No, he didn't kill them all. So what did he do? Just ignore the Prophet's hadith? Or he understood it in a context, okay? That it, with conditions maybe, all right? Yes, he would do that if there were conditions. The condition being that there wouldn't be greater harm than good, right? Common sense says that. So Sayyidina Ali knew the hadith. The Prophet said, who are the Kharijites? The rebels. They think they're more pious than everybody else and they rebel against the authority. Okay? Those are the Khawarij, rebels. And they have a political and a religious element to them. And the Prophet said, if I was alive, I would kill all of them. Yeah, they're the rebels. They're going to cause problems in the Ummah. So Sayyidina Ali narrates the hadith and Sayyidina Ali is ruling when the Kharijites emerge, as the Prophet prophesied. But he didn't kill them. He said they can go and live in their mosques, in their villages, and pray in their masajid as long as they leave us alone. The moment they start killing us, then we fight them. So Sayyidina Ali understood the conditions, the preconditions before the implementation of the Prophet's hadith. And of course, he did, in a certain period of time, the Battle of Nahawan did fight them. Okay, he did fight them. But before that and after that, he let them live. So he understood the conditions. So again, another reason is that, yes, there may be a hadith and a ruling in a madhab, but the hadith has understood conditions around it. Why are we saying all this? Is because the best way for you students of knowledge, brand new students of knowledge, this whole live stream, the purpose of this live stream is to introduce Muslims to the path of knowledge and piety and worship. The best way to go about this is to study the four imams, choose who you believe is most worthy of following. That's the ijtihad, the scholarly effort of the common person. And then follow that person. Because we don't have time, we don't have the time of day to study every single issue and get to the bottom of every single issue. But we can study the imams and their methodologies. And then it becomes a function after that. So this is the imam and the methodology that I believe is most worthy of following. And then after that, I'm going to follow him. And I could study his evidences as much as I can. But now, me, my life, my family, my community, my household, my masjid, we have a policy. This is the book. And it's all predictable after that. And trust me, when you go to communities who adopt a non-madhhab methodology, by the way, that is a methodology, you don't see learned people. You see confused people. You see people ping-ponging of opinions all over the place.